We're here with the Bonner County Historical, no, Bonner, yeah, Bonner County Historical Society and Museum. With me here in the Tiki Room is Jen Plummer, Executive Director of the Bonner County Historical Society and Museum. Also with us is Hannah Combs, the Museum Administrator, and Olivia Fee, the... You're probably going to have to tell me your title.
Outreach Coordinator.
Outreach Coordinator. Okay. And good morning to you all. How are you doing?
Good morning.
Good morning. Great to be here.
I am surprised that you are all here, considering the conditions of the roads out there. But everybody made it.
We made it.
That's great.
Thanks
for being here. And two of you beat me here, actually. So I'm glad you weren't locked out. Well, let's start by Jen Plummer. You are known in the community already, but let's introduce folks to you as the museum's executive director, because that's sort of a new position for you.
It's a brand new position for me. I just started in October, and it's been wonderful. I absolutely love it.
Okay. And what brought you to the museum?
Well, I was the director at Kinderhaven for 9 years. And we actually ended up having to close our group home because of federal legislation. And, and it was heartbreaking. But some really good things have come out of it. The Kinderhaven group home is now the Kinderhaven Foundation. And the foundation is going to continue to serve local kids in crisis. We have our Festival of Trees coming up this Saturday. Mm-hmm. And so it's actually sold out. So we're very excited about that. And, again, just some really great things continuing for Kinderhaven.
Yeah, I was pleased to see that organization continued in some form even after I don't remember exactly the technical details of the law that passed, but I know it made it basically impossible to stay open, right?
It did. Yeah. It made it impossible for us to serve local kids.
Yeah.
Yep.
But you've moved on to the Bonner County Historical Society and Museum.
Yes, yeah. And I just couldn't be more thrilled. I just think we have such an extraordinary local history, and it's just been fascinating for me to jump into it. And I just love working with these ladies and the whole crew at the museum, and the board is amazing, and our volunteers are amazing, and I couldn't be happier. It's been a great change.
Yeah. Did you, were you pretty familiar with the museum before you became employed there, or was this...
I have to say, like a lot of local people, I've been in Sandpoint or North Idaho for almost 30 years, and it had been many years since I had set foot into the museum. So mm-hmm. I'm disappointed in myself having to admit that. But like the rest of the community, I really want to promote this amazing organization to our local community and have our locals, not just visitors, come in and enjoy what we've got here. It's really extraordinary.
Yeah. What is the, like, as far as people who walk in to the museum, is it mostly tourists looking for something to do, or is it local people from around town? Go ahead, Anna.
Yeah, I've analyzed our admissions a little bit. I'd say throughout the year, it's probably about 80% tourists who come into the museum.
Wow.
So we're trying to work on those numbers a little bit and get more locals in. We do see a huge rush in the summer with people coming through town. If you look us up online, we have a pretty great online presence. So when people look up things to do in Sandpoint, the museum often pops up as one of the top attractions. It's just a matter of trying to get all of our wonderful locals to find us down in Lakeview Park by the big yellow caboose down there.
Yeah. Right. And it's pretty rare that a local is doing the what to do in Sandpoint thing, because
exactly.
You feel like you know already. You know?
Yeah. We do have people mm-hmm. coming in who have family visiting and, are looking for things for them to show off the area. And I don't know. I mean, we have interactions all the time that I love, where someone will come back and say, I haven't been here since the fourth grade on my field trip, but my son or daughter just had their fourth grade field trip and reminded me how awesome the museum is, so we came back as a family. So we do see that a lot. So we see people coming back who haven't been in for a very long time, but we're always hoping to get more of our local population here to visit the museum.
Yeah. It's tricky. When was the last time you had been in, Jen, before you go. Did you mention that?
I thought about it. I think it was in the first couple of years I moved to Sandpoint, so that's going back into the early 2000s.
Okay. Yeah. Well, a lot's changed there since then.
Yes.
Yeah. So you came on board as executive director, just sort of interested in local history, would you say? Or what?
I think probably my executive director's skill set, it's very helpful. I've been running an organization for, a lot of years, local organization. But personally, I'm passionate about history. Again, learning so much about our local history, I thought I knew a fair bit. I'm learning. I didn't know much at all. And again, completely fascinated by it. And, my personal life, I love, historical movies, fiction, museums. I've been to, so many museums all over this country. And I love being part of it. It's a really exciting new endeavor for me.
Yeah. You've been learning new stuff about local history. What's the latest thing that you've discovered that surprised you?
Probably one of the things that, before I started at the museum, I read the awesome books that we have available, especially this coming up this shopping season. We have our, not only our museum gift shop, but we also have the Guild downtown. And so I read those books, and there was just so much I didn't know. I would say what stands out is, a lot of people know about the story of David Thompson, but what a fascinating character in history, person in history. I'm just absolutely blown away by his story. And I would, again, encourage people to come into the museum and especially hear Hannah talk about our exhibits and more about it, because it really is just extraordinary.
David Thompson is he is an interesting character. I don't know as much about him as I probably should, but first European structure built in Idaho maybe was built by him.
Not in Idaho, okay. I don't think, but in Bonner County.
In Bonner County.
Yes,
okay.
He built the fur trading post over by Hope.
Hope, yeah.
Yeah, so it was called Coley Spell House, and that was how he pronounced Kalispell for the local tribe. But over his journeys, he really doesn't get a lot of credit in the United States compared to Lewis and Clark.
Yeah.
But he was in this area around the same time. Mm-hmm. And he is responsible for mapping and exploring the vast majority of British Columbia, much of Western Canada. Over his journeys, he traveled, I think, somewhere in the range of like 40,000 to 60,000 miles by boat, by foot, and by, I can't remember if he did a lot by horseback, but he really pioneered like canoeing in the wild rivers of Western Canada. He was just a really fascinating guy with a huge skill set for cartography, for astronomy, and he put all of those skills to work trying to, like many people, work on finding the Northwest Passage and good travel routes for the fur trading business.
Yeah, but doesn't get as much credit as Lewis and Clark. Well, you got to be first. That's the story, I think. Or else have like a great TV show or song. Like Daniel Boone or Davy Crockett and stuff like that.
We need to work on our David Thompson song.
Yeah, that's what it is. You need a number one hit about David Thompson, and then everybody will be pouring into the museum looking for information. Should we talk about what's coming up at the museum? And actually, before what's coming up at the museum, what's coming up downtown at the Guild tomorrow is... Is it just called Ladies' Night? We have the poster for it around here. It's Ladies' Shopping Night or something like that.
As far as I know, I believe it's just Ladies' Night downtown.
Okay. It's Ladies' Night downtown in Sandpoint. Absolutely. Yeah. Olivia, why don't you tell us what's going on?
So we're not part of the stamping or the shopping spree, but we are going to be open until 8. And we do have our own prizes going. So every $10 you spend at the Guild, you get your name in the raffle. And there's a gift basket that has all the goodies from the Guild. We have 2 tickets for the museum and I believe 2 theater tickets to give away. So stop by the Guild and we've got lots of stuffers, stocking stuffers. We have our very own exclusive Christmas ornaments that you want to check out, and everything else. So stop by the Guild tomorrow night.
Cool. What are the Christmas ornaments?
So we have a Christmas ornament that is stained glass. I believe it's by Skeleton Key. And she created inspiration from City Beach. So it's the sun coming up between the mountains with the sand and the water. And it's just really beautiful. And then we have a few other ornaments that is a locally made little angels. I think they're made out of sheep wool.
Yeah, they're made out of wool roving. Those are by Emily Bond, made those.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Cool. Well, I love it. So that's tomorrow at the Guild.
Yep.
And that's downtown and kind of in between the Panada and the Panada and the Panada, I guess, right? Yeah, kind of set in there. And at the museum the following day would be Free First Saturday, wouldn't it? Who wants to talk about that?
Yes, we have Free First Saturday this coming Saturday, and that is sponsored this time by Beth Craven.
Okay, which means Free First Saturday, you do it the first Saturday of every month. You're usually not open on the weekends at all, right?
That's correct, yeah. So we're usually not open on the weekends, just Tuesday through Friday from 10 to 4. But on the first Saturday of each month, we're open from 10 to 2, and admission is free for everyone on those days.
Is that your busiest day of the month?
I would say yes, day by day. Yeah. Yeah, we do get a lot of visitors. We get a lot of families and people who work during the week and wouldn't otherwise be able to come in.
Okay. Just curious about how much, you know, how much people are attending that. Yeah, I haven't been in a while. I keep threatening to go. Maybe this is the day. Maybe this is the weekend if I can get out of the driveway. We can, come back and talk more about what's going on at the museum.
Yeah, we have some exciting stuff coming up next year we'd like to talk about.
Okay. We will be back, to discuss that in just a moment. Right now, I'm going to play a little music. It was at number one on this date 50 years ago in America. A little historical, trip.
Well, the museum happens to be 50 years old this year.
72?
Yes, and myself this year.
Well, okay. So here we go. From this date in 1972, it's The Temptations with Papa Was a Rolling Stone. We'll be back in just a little bit to talk more about the Bonner County Historical Society and Museum and keep you company on your perilous drive to work. Go slow, everybody. Here we go. That's The Temptations with Papa Was a Rolling Stone. You're listening to The Morning Show here on 88.5 KRFY. I am your host, Jack, my co-host Jim, unfortunately, is out sick, and he was absent last week because it was Thanksgiving, and I think that's where he was at a family Thanksgiving and caught the flu. So, sorry, Jim. I hope you're feeling okay this morning and on the mend. I think I was in all by myself right before then, too. It's been a long time since I had a co-host in here. But that's okay. Sorry. I'm here with the museum, the folks from the museum. How about that? We have the complete staff of the Bonner County Historical Society and Museum on hand.
Yes.
Jen Plummer, Olivia Fee, and Hannah Combs, all present and accounted for here at KRFY. Wait, who's watching the museum?
Well, we're not open yet.
Okay, good. Phew. Okay, well, you're here, and we were just talking about Free First Saturday, which is on this Saturday, the 3rd, Ladies' Night. Downtown is tomorrow night, and the Guild is going to be open late until 8. But coming up in January, we've got big things going on at the museum.
Yes, really for the first time that I think, at least in a long time, we are actually closing our doors to the public for the month of January. And there's some big reasons behind that. We are going to do a deep dive into our collection and just familiarize ourselves with the vastness of it and get organized, because we have some exciting stuff coming up that Hannah's going to talk about.
Yeah, so earlier this year we applied for a grant through a program called CAP. It's, I believe, Collections Assessment for Preservation. And what this grant enables us to do, we did receive it, which is exciting. It will allow us to bring in two professional collections assessors. So these are people who travel around the country working with museums, helping them build the resources and make plans to take better care of their collections. So in the spring sometime, we will have two people come in. One will be a collections expert, and one will be providing information to us about our building and facilities. So those two people will spend a couple days with us, with the staff, with our board, with our volunteers, gathering information, looking through our buildings, and then they will develop a plan for us that will tell us, you know, things like, hey, your humidity in the building needs to be adjusted 3%. Here's the best way to do that. Or you guys really need to invest in this type of equipment so that you can store this sensitive movie film more safely. Mm-hmm. Things like that. So they'll do a big picture look, and then in their plan, they'll be able to narrow that down and give us specific advice that we can use in the coming years to take better care of the wonderful objects that the community donates to the museum, because it is our mission and our duty to care for those objects and help them tell the stories of our history. So in preparation for that, we are going to be taking some time in January to really dive in to the collection. Because we do so many services for community members throughout the day, we don't often get a lot of time to just go hide in the back room and sit mm-hmm. with all the stuff and get to know it. So that's what we'll be doing in January. We will be kind of getting a better idea of how our collection is currently organized, understanding, you know, what we see as some key issues that we want to ask the assessors to address, and just getting prepared for their visit. Cause this is a big deal. It's probably only going to happen once. And it's exciting that it's happening during our 50th anniversary. This is really a good time to mm-hmm. sit down and evaluate where we've been, how the collection has been managed over the last 50 years, and where we want to go in the future.
Yeah. Well, that building wasn't built like as a dedicated museum space, was it?
It was.
Yes. It was. Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah. Is there anything special about the museum, like as compared to another commercial building? You know?
Well, so it was built in the 70s. Uh-huh. I know at the time, or it was built in the late 70s. So the museum was founded in 72. By, I think, 1978. Six or eight, they had raised enough money mm-hmm. to build the building, and then it was custom designed. I think one of the things that you'll see when you look at the museum, a lot of people say it looks like a Pizza Hut because it's got this really distinctive
that's true.
Roof yes. line. Uh-huh. But it has really wide eaves on the building. They're about 3 feet deep, uh-huh. and so that helps keep a lot of shade in the building. Ah. It keeps the building from overheating, and it really regulates that temperature. So if you're in the building, you know, in the winter or in the summer, the building pretty much stays around 65 degrees, which is in the good zone for collections management. Mm-hmm. So the big thing is we want to keep the temperature consistent throughout the year. We don't want to mm-hmm. have big temperature swings. We want to keep the humidity even. And we're in a pretty good area for that as well. Just with our climate here, we don't have really high humidity, which helps quite a lot. Mm-hmm.
Go ahead, Olivia.
I just wanted to jump in really quick. Since we're talking about the history of the building and the museum itself, we actually have a mini exhibit at the library that gives you the whole timeline and history of the museum and the historical society itself. And I believe we'll have that up until December 27th. So if you want more details, go and check that out.
And Olivia curated that exhibit. It's her first exhibit. We're very excited about it.
Is awesome. So go to the library and check it out.
Okay. A little meta history. So do you guys like monitor the humidity in the building? You have a little gauge that tells you anything like that?
To my knowledge, we never have, but that's another perk of doing this assessment. They will be sending us humidity monitors so that we can put those out. And it's nice because we currently have the museum building itself, about half of which is collection storage. We also have an off-site apartment that we use as storage for some of our bigger pieces. And then because the museum doesn't have any double doors. So if we receive like out there, we have things like a railroad baggage cart that's about 6 feet wide and 15 feet long. So for some of our oversized objects like that, we have that space. We also have a storage container behind the building that you may remember. We had a beautiful mural painted on it by Savannah Pitts last year. And so we have that available as well. So the humidity monitors will really help us assess, you know, what's the humidity like in the museum building versus the storage container? What is actually safe to store out there? I know up to this point, we haven't really stored any collections pieces in the storage container because it is more exposed to the elements and the temperature swings. So that's where we keep more of our, you know, display pieces and tables and pedestals that we use just for exhibiting collections pieces.
Do you guys have any equipment in the museum, like storage equipment that I wouldn't have myself at home for storing Christmas ornaments and stuff like that? You have like, you know, cool vaults or anything like that?
That's a good question. Most of what you see in our collection right now is it's pretty much, you know, what our volunteers and staff and board have been able to build themselves order, you know, in our main storage area for objects. We still have the original wooden shelves that were installed back in around 1980 when we opened. We are working on some higher tech pieces to help. We just got a grant last year from Cal, from Community Assistance League, to help us, I think that was actually our Angels Over Sandpoint grant. But that grant helped us buy equipment that would help some of our archives be fireproofed. So we're always thinking about flood and fire damage. If anything happened to our building, what would we be able to save? It's a very complicated process. And another thing that the assessors will be able to help us with is just a matter of, you know, if we have a fire, that would be devastating. How do we prevent that? But if we... You know, if we had, we don't currently have a sprinkler system. So that's something to keep in mind. But, you know, there's two sides to it. If we had a sprinkler system, would everything be damaged by water? So what's the best practice currently in the industry? That's something that the assessors will be able to help us evaluate.
Interesting. Well, I look forward to finding out what they tell you because that sounds cool. I wonder if they will say get a sprinkler system or if they'll say, whatever you do, don't put in a sprinkler system. Put in something else. Like that, I don't know. There's some movie where they put in like a gas dispenser, you know, something like that. So it doesn't get wet. But I can't remember.
And I do want to say, like, if you've seen any movies where museums play a role.
Yes, and I have.
You're probably thinking of museum storage as like Smithsonian level, custom made drawers to fit certain specimens of birds and things like that. That's not what most small museums have. We're actually pretty fortunate for the size of museum that we are. We have a pretty robust storage area. It's fairly well organized. There's always ways we can improve, but that is a big part of what we do, is just keeping things well preserved. It's also a huge expense. For example, if you are and we're striving for this, but if you're trying to go for that like national preservation standard, everything has to be acid free. There are special archival materials you store things in. For example, like one box to store a quilt in might cost $30 because of the materials it's made out of, because it's guaranteed to help keep it safe for 50 years.
Yeah.
So there is a lot of expense involved. We're always raising money to help store all of the wonderful things in our collection. So we're striving for that level of museum storage that you would see in the movies. But as a small museum, there's always work to be done.
Yeah. You guys do have like a retinal scanner, though, to get into the back room. The
of course. Room. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. There's like passcodes, fingerprint scanning, all of that.
I thought
of course.
So. Well, that's good. Security is important. Wow. That. Do you guys have the, totally out of the blue, do you guys have the like the 600 foot long snow ski cap? Is that you guys or is that somebody else?
We do.
You have it?
Yes.
Oh, my.
Currently, okay. It is in storage. Uh-huh. It is rolled like a ball of yarn.
Okay.
And that ball of ski hat is about 4 feet in diameter.
Wow.
As far as I know, it still holds the world record that it broke when it was made. It's so cool. We also have the knitting patterns that they use to create it. So the hat, if you have never heard of it or seen it, it was made in the 70s as a fundraising promotional thing for Winter Carnival. And so all of the businesses in town pitched in to have a section of the hat made. And so you'll see the hat was knitted with different companies' names knitted into it. It was made on a knitting machine so that you could put letters and things like that into it. It's over 700 feet long. And we have some wonderful photos of it when it was in the Winter Carnival Parade. There's another one. I still can't figure out what building it is. It looks like it might be Condo del Sol, somewhere in that area, where they have someone wearing the hat up on a balcony. And then the thing, it's being carried, and it goes, like, way out on the lake. You can hardly see the last person out there holding the end of it.
Cool.
That's so cool.
Yeah. I think that was out in the Winter Carnival a couple years ago, right? You guys break it out every so often?
It may have been. I think that would have been before any of us were with the museum.
All right. Not super recently, but in my time anyway. It was before, or it was after the 60s anyway, I would say, because I remember seeing it, and I think it's pretty cool. Let's see. Should we talk a little bit about after the CAP grant? You want to tease what else is coming up next year?
Well, we would also like to mention that we have wonderful volunteers. And so during that month of January, when we're closed to the public, we're definitely still open for appointments for research. And we encourage anyone who's interested in volunteering at the museum, give us a call. Come on over. There's going to be some really exciting things that are happening, like we've been talking about. And we would love for some of our community members to join us in this, you know, whole new learning process with the grant coming up.
Yeah, we will also be able to provide training for volunteers who want to learn more about the collection and the process of accessioning, which is the formal procedure to bring an object into the collection. So it involves, you know, doing some research about the object. It involves database entry. It's really good for people who are detail-oriented and really enjoy local history. So if you have any interest in that, we are currently looking for volunteers to help us in January with some of our work on the collection.
If you're interested in kind of getting more involved in the community, what a better place to volunteer than at the museum.
We're a fun group, and we've got a fun group of volunteers, so you'll have a lot of fun.
Let's see, anything new coming up next year? We'll have you back, of course, to talk about it in detail, but anything else after January, anything we should look for on the horizon? Who's taking it?
What?
Jen,
we are very excited to have an event. We haven't talked about what we're planning, but later next year, we're going to be having a fundraising event, details to come. And I'll let Hannah talk a little bit. We are very excited to have a new exhibit next year.
Yeah, so this is going to be a big project for all of us as fairly new staff members. As anyone who has visited the museum recently knows, Heather Upton, our former director and curator, is a very talented curator, and we have many exhibits on display that she designed that are really stunning and beautiful and informative. So now that Heather has taken on her position as the Arts and Historic Preservation Officer with the city, she has been providing us with some guidance as we go into this new year, thinking about new exhibits. But the process of curating is a new one for our team. We're so excited that Olivia has curated her first exhibit, and we're excited to see what she brings to our upcoming ones. But we're going to be going about this, you know, really learning a lot about the process of how do you design an exhibit? Who's your audience? What stories are you going to tell? And how do you represent those visually? So it's going to be, there are tons of resources that we are excited to use from some of the big museums around the country to really learn how to dive in and put it all together. But I think one thing I've learned is that creating an exhibit is so much bigger than just, you know, putting things on the wall. There's a narrative, there's, you know, just crafting the story you're trying to tell.
How do you guys decide what is an exhibit? Is there an exhibits committee? Do people like come to you with ideas, then you kind of approve it and run with it? Or how do you, is there a process?
Yeah. So a little bit of all that, you know, we're constantly taking in ideas from the community. People will say, oh, you know, do you have anything on this? And if the answer is no, you know, that goes into our bank of like, oh, we should probably have something about the Long Bridge on display or Jerry Kramer or things like that. So, we're constantly brainstorming ideas. Most of the exhibits at the museum are what we call permanent exhibits. So those are on themes that are really central to our history here. So upstairs, for example, we have exhibits that talk about the Ice Age floods, which are the earliest recorded events that happened here, that talk about the Kalispell and Kootenai tribes and their legacy in this area, and talk about David Thompson, who was significant as the first white settler explorer of this area. And so those are stories that are so central to our history that we have permanent exhibits, and those will stay up perpetually. They will get little makeovers every, you know, 5-7 years or so. But when we get to do a temporary exhibit like we're planning right now, that's a much bigger endeavor. So that's where we have a lot of freedom to pick a theme. So trying to figure out what's important to Bonner County right now. What are people going to connect with? How do we make this relevant and fascinating? And, you know, of the thousands and thousands of stories that we hold at the museum, which ones do we get to feature this time?
Well, and I look forward to finding out what the next one's going to be, which will be sometime in 2023. Right now, if you go to the museum, which people should do on Saturday for free or pay the modest admission fee during the week. What do you see on display right now? What's there?
So the
in addition to what are the permanent collection,
the temporary exhibit we have right now is the Women Who Shaped Bonner County. And it is just a beautiful, as Hannah said, stunning exhibit. And so if you haven't seen it, you really must come before it's no longer with us.
Well, is there anything else you guys want to talk about or make mention of before we continue on with our day's programming?
Well, I'm just so thrilled to be part of this really extraordinary organization, and come and visit us. We really, we just do some really great stuff, and I'm just, again, so excited to be part of this awesome team.
Yeah.
And you won't, we won't be silent during January, even if our doors are closed. We will still be putting some great stuff out into the community. Again, we will be open by appointment only for research requests. But you can always give us a call if you need anything, and we will get back to you. We will also be putting some good stuff out online. Olivia keeps our social media feeds full of fascinating stories and great photos, so you'll keep seeing some of that. And I am determined that this will be the time, now that things have settled down, where we're able to bring back our articles in the reader. Ben and Zach and Lindsay, if you're hearing this, hold me to it. I promise we're going to get some good articles back out into the community for your reading enjoyment.
Well, that sounds pretty good. Are you guys going to be at Ladies Night, the three of you? Any of the three of you?
Some combination.
Yes. Oh, you're going to be shopping. Okay. And then you guys will be on hand on Saturday if people want to say hi.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, there you go. This has been the Bonner County Historical Society and Museum staff. Jen Plummer, the executive director. Olivia Fee, the outreach coordinator.
Yes.
And Hannah Combs, the museum administrator. Yes, that's right. Did that. And now we're going to take another trip back in time to 1982, this time, 40 years ago. On this date, where I think on the UK charts, it was Dexy's Midnight Runners with their, I think they're kind of a one-hit wonder over here on this side of the Atlantic, but they had a couple, they were a little more impactful in Britain. This is a song you'll probably be familiar with. This is Come On Eileen by Dexy's Midnight Runners. 40 years ago today, it was at number one on the pop charts in the UK. And I'll be back with some upcoming events for this weekend after this.